Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Well, well, well. Good morning. Welcome back. I am Dean Weitzman, your host at Court Radio every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
There you go. Legal's out of the way, folks. Your questions are important to us. We're going to have an action-packed show. And I'm afraid we're going to run out of time. So if you've got legal issues, don't hesitate to give us a call at 215-227-2727. The number for all things legal. Yeah, baby. Manny Manuel, good morning.
Good morning, counselor. How are you?
Doing well, Eric. Tactics Jackson.
In the building. Present, sir.
Yes, sir. The firm is here for your edification. 215-227.
Edification?
Is that?
2727. By the way, nobody mentioned what I'm wearing today.
So that's how you spell it. Okay. We were wondering.
Well, we created the word, so I figured, you know.
Well, I was wondering if it was one or two G's. I really was, but now I'm
I went right. with one.
I went with one. Such as your right.
My prerogative.
Absolutely. Yes. And then hold on, back up. The nuggeting, for YouTube, the act of dishing out valuable information.
There you go. If you'll recall, folks, that's the word. That's the word we coined on Court Radio to describe all the great info we give out every Saturday morning.
Back, they've even got the proper enunciation of the word with the brackets and what gets more.
All right.
Thank you, Dean, for this. Adding this to the language lexicon of the world. Thank you, Mr. Mr. Weinstein.
It might actually go on Webster. Who knows?
It could happen.
Would that be a goal of sorts? Would you be like, hey?
Hey, yeah, there you go.
Nuggeting.
Okay. We are nuggeting today.
Yes,
speaking of which, we have the one and only Todd Burke, attorney at law, with us on the show. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
Welcome, counselor.
Good morning, Manny.
It's been many, many years. Todd was a guest here when probably we were in another studio at another time.
A whole nother time.
Yeah.
Before my time.
A long time ago.
That's a long time.
Studio far, far away.
Todd focuses his practice on Social Security disability claims.
Hey, the AARP guy. Older people.
Hey, you don't have to be old.
No, you don't have to be older.
But we're going to get to Todd, and we're going to answer your questions today on disability. So if you are thinking of filing a disability claim, this is the guy for you. We at My Philly Lawyer maintain a network of attorneys throughout the city and beyond, all the way across the country. Mm-hmm. And Todd is our guy for disability in this area. I don't hesitate. I've got Todd's number. I give him a call. Whenever we have the potential for a disability claim, he's the one who gets the call from us in Philly. You could go to big firms and get lost in the shuffle, or you can be cared for in the loving, caring arms of Todd M. Burke. All right?
And here's my loving, caring arms. Right
there
here. It is.
And it really is an area that requires somebody who focuses all of their time and attention on that area of the law. Todd, first of all, what is the process? Somebody comes to you today saying, you know, my back's hurting. I had surgery. I'm a laborer. I can't do it. What do you do with those folks from that point?
Well, first of all, the definition for Social Security disability, which is the toughest definition of disability out there, is total disability from any job whatsoever, not realistic jobs, hypothetical jobs. And if it is deemed that somebody can do some other kind of work, easier work, more simple routine work than their usual work, that's someone that we want to talk to, especially if they've been out of work for at least 6 months, going close to a year, or expect to be, because there is a time durational requirement, too. It has to be total disability for at least 12 months. It does not have to be permanent. There's no partial disability, except in terms of time frames, but it has to be total, and it has to be for at least 12 months. That's the nutshell definition right there, Dean.
So in my scenario, I've got somebody who's working with their hands and their body. They're in their late 40s, say, and early 50s. They've been working for a couple decades, and they can't do that anymore. But they could do a desk job. But they've got no experience, no education, nothing behind them. If they called me to say, hey, can I be a paralegal? I'd be like, what are you talking about? You've been a laborer your whole life. I can't have you as a paralegal. Even though they're capable, if they have no experience, what happens?
There are certain defined problems, medical issues, physical and mental, which by themselves may qualify for an award of total disability. But there is a separate set of rules that we refer to as the grids, which take place and affect when someone has reached the age of 50 and then 55. And they do take into account that someone who has basically been a laborer in heavy-duty jobs over the age of 50, perhaps has lost the use of one hand, is not going to be someone who's going to have transferable skills and employability in a lower exertional job, be it light or sedentary, depending on the age and the disabilities.
So to frame that in easier terms, the older you are, the easier it is to get disability benefits?
Absolutely. The less education you have, the older you are, the more difficult your job was in terms of physical demands and the impact of impairments. In other words, and I tell my clients this all the time to summarize it, the worse off you are, the better the claim.
So now going into like sedentary work, let's say most of the time you've done sedentary work. What's the threshold of getting approved in that situation?
That makes it more difficult because now I've got to prove that someone meets the standard of such medical impairment that they can't even do sedentary work regardless of their age.
And what is it that you use to prove that?
It's almost always medical records. I tell people the most important thing besides patience to engage in during the course of a claim is to make sure that you're seeing whatever doctors that you need to see and that you're recommended to see. If you're unhappy with medication, don't just stop. Ask for a different kind of medication that may have a better effect and less side effects. If you are not getting relief from some kind of protocol with back treatment like physical therapy, then you've got to at least think about exploring more interventional therapies like epidurals, other injections, and in the case of some cases, operations, of course.
215-227-2727, the number for Court Radio right now. If you've got a legal issue or if you're sitting on a disability claim, jump on the phone, give us a call, and we will knock your questions out of the park. So who makes that decision? Who decides whether Eric is disabled?
Well, the bottom line will come down to usually an administrative law judge. These are meritorious judges who have qualified to be judges only in the Social Security situation, although they do handle other types of administrative claims in certain cases. But a judge decides.
Post-COVID, we're in this post-COVID world. How has that changed your practice?
It has made it a whole lot more effective, unfortunately, because instead of claimants and attorneys having to travel and appear in front of administrative law judges, now it's all done electronically and telephonically. So even the hearings are by telephone, not even by video. The demands on the claimant are much, much less. The claimant is home in a private room on a telephone, not even video, as I say. Generally, I'm where I am. The judge is where he or she is. They can be anywhere in the country, although usually in the general Philadelphia geographical area for claims in this area.
Wow. Wow. That makes a huge difference. You're not schlepping to some faraway court. You can handle a lot more cases probably in a given number of hours.
It's and that's absolutely true, Dean. It's made claimants and my life a whole lot easier because it saves all of the time for travel. And I would drive to Reading, where I still have an office, Harrisburg, Jersey City, Egg Harbor Township, Dover, Delaware.
That's a lot of travel.
It would be a lot of driving. And this way, I don't have to do that. I can focus more on the claims. And in addition, just the way that we do things in my firm is I can work whenever I have work to do. If it's nighttime, Friday nights, I'm preparing claimants tomorrow, Sunday morning, for hearings on Monday because I've got to get them ready. I can work on weekends when I want to and when I need to, but it makes it very, very easy.
Wow, your dry cleaning bill must have gone down to the floor.
You have no idea. I gave away all my dress clothes to a veterans organization for veterans trying to get jobs. I don't need them anymore.
So this leisure look is pretty much it, huh?
I don't need to get dressed up.
Yeah.
About once every 2 or 3 months, I do have to appear in front of a judge. And they don't even care about getting dressed up anymore in this field. So I'll show up like this, and they're fine about the whole thing.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, judges ain't dressed up under their robes.
They're
either,
not dressed up under their robes. They've never been dressed up under their robes. It just gives us the same playing field. That's all.
215-227-2727. So we got some callers. Let's talk to Mary on line one. Good morning, Mary. Welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, dear. Turn your radio down and let's talk about what your question is.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
We hear you.
You ready? All right.
Yes.
All right. All right. What's your question, Mary?
I got hurt in New Orleans. And I fell out of this truck, and I stayed down there in the hospital for over a month. And I want to know, where can I get a lawyer? Do you do it, or can I get one? And I was turned down in New Orleans one time for a lawyer. So I want to know, where do I go from here?
Okay, what a great question, and here's why. Because if you're suing a company that does business in New Orleans and also in Philadelphia, the question is, can you sue them here or for their negligence there? And the answer is yes. In this instance, however, the Lyft driver is the primary target for your claim. Not the Lyft company, because these drivers are deemed to be independent contractors in most jurisdictions. And as an independent contractor, he only works in New Orleans, I presume. And therefore, yes, the most likely place for venue for you would be in New Orleans. Now, of course, you talk about falling out of a Lyft truck, but you don't describe how that happened. And that's the critical point here of your claim and why you may have been turned down. You have to prove, Mary, that the Lyft driver was negligent. That means that he did something wrong, something that an ordinary Lyft driver would or should not have done under those circumstances. Like, for instance, you had one leg out of the Lyft vehicle. You were, getting yourself ready to get out. And he takes off and you fly out of the truck versus you just happen to fall out of the truck for some reason. Now, maybe this truck is so high that it requires him to have assisted you to get out. And there still may be negligence. But again, The answer to your question is New Orleans is the place most likely where you have to bring this claim. And when you describe how it happened to a New Orleans attorney, make sure you're talking about what the Lyft driver did that was wrong and that caused you to fall out. That's the focus you have to be on in order to get somebody to pay attention to you. Mary, thanks for calling Court Radio. Have a blessed and great Saturday, dear.
Thank you, Dean.
You're welcome.
There's two things that really changed our lives, the pandemic and ride sharing.
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously changed our lives.
Yep.
Let me ask you this. What does a person have to have historically from a work perspective in order to be entitled to disability benefits?
When we're speaking of disability benefits, there are several types of claims, but the main focus is generally the differences between SSD and SSI. SSD means that you have a recent significant work history. The D is disability insurance. What the insurance has to do with is not medical, but rather credits that you've earned from your work that you're paying into the eventual retirement system anyway. So generally for an SSD claim, if you're over the age of 31, there's a sliding scale below that age. You had to have worked at least 5 of the previous 10 years. SSI is the same definition of total disability for at least 12 months, but it's with it without a recent significant work history. It may, and there's no reason ever. The reason why there's no recent work history is not the significant part, just the reason why along that way something happened that made you became unemployable or rather totally disabled anyway.
Let's give people a scenario. So maybe a woman decides, I'm going to stop, or a man, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to be sexist today. I'll try not to.
No, don't worry about it.
Somebody decides, hey, I'm going to help my children by taking care of my grandchildren. I'm going to stop working. And they stop working for a few years. And then, lo and behold, they have an accident and they become unable to go back to work, and they decided I need to go back to work now, but I can't go back to work because I had this accident. Under what scenario do they fall?
That would be SSI. That's called working inside the home as opposed to outside the home, but basically it's a matter of paying into the system. And what happens in those cases is that someone who is home taking care of the home, male or female, and kids, and isn't working, something awful happens along the way, their claim would be for SSI. But there are financial restrictions. It's means-driven, like welfare is the technical term. It means, basically, you can't have more than $2,000 in the bank or of any kind of liquid assets. No life insurance, no secondary property, nothing like that. Basically, welfare eligibility.
SSD, is there any financial limitations that you can, you know, be worth or have money coming in from non-working sources that would prevent you from getting Social Security disability?
No. And I have many, many cases where someone is claiming total disability. They still have income as long as it's passive income, whether it's royalties or from owning the business or what have you. The key is it can't be wages. Wages are going to work and working. That's what wages are about. As long as it's not wages, it can be sick pay or long-term disability or any kind of other a passive income as long as it's not wages. You can make money and still claim or be on SSD.
And now that brings us around to the normal scenario for my clients.
Right.
So I have a client. We're settling her case for $1.5 million. She was in a very bad slip and fall accident, and she's never been able to go back to work since then. She's now on disability benefits, and she's going to get approximately $1 million in a settlement. Will she lose her disability benefits?
No. And by the way, the money she's getting, I'm sure rightfully so, that settlement. But If you're on SSD, you have earned those benefits like retirement benefits. So if a case settles and you get a lot of money for that, there's no effect on your SSD benefits. Same thing if you were to inherit a lot of money while you're on SSD. No problem at all. It's not means-driven, has nothing to do with outside income as long as it's not wages.
So now let's focus back again. Difference between SSD and SSI is whether you were working at the time you are declaring your disability.
That's the difference.
If you are, if you have earned those credits, 20 out of 40 credits, quarters of a year, if you've earned those credits, you're going to be applying for SSD. And if you don't have that kind of work history, you're applying for SSI. And by the way, I get this question from personal injury attorneys all the time. I do an awful lot of referral work. I have a huge network as well, of course, Dean, as you well know. Settling a case like that when someone is on SSI is going to make them lose their SSI. You can't get that much money and still have SSI.
How do you work around that? Is there a workaround?
You know,
can I, as the recipient of those funds, give them away? Give them to my daughter, my son, my anybody?
Absolutely not. The government knows when cases settle. They know when money hits bank accounts. You can't hide, give away, gamble away that money. Nothing of the sort. The preferred way, and this is how I instruct my claimants in these events, is go to your Social Security office, although now this is a different subject. Now you have to make an appointment. Explain what happened, and they will suspend your SSI until whatever money you've gotten, whatever way, is spent down in a reasonable way, keeping receipts over the course of however many months it takes. And then they may be able to restore your SSI. You may have to reapply all over again, but usually that is a short matter anyway. Those claims get expedited.
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Todd Burke, how do people get in touch with you if they're listening today and they want to file for disability benefits?
Well, I've been doing this 44 years, and my number has been and still remains 215-557-7777.
Oh, wow. Good
And it is a good number. It is the lucky number. Try to make it easy for people to remember, and I should add that I have a fantastic staff. They've worked me for a long, long time. They know what they're doing. They try to help. They know when to pass questions on to me.
I want to know, how long does this process take? What's a realistic expectation for someone who is just now deciding, I think I might need to go on disability?
From application, remember, you've been out of work for 6 or 12 months to begin with. From the application until the culmination of the claim, it will take anywhere between 11 to 13 months. So patience is required. I have an enormous amount of patience. I need to, for the claimants that are working with me, because of the volume, my claimants need to have patience, and it's tough on them because it's really a horrible time in their lives, and I get that.
Is it better to contact you when you're initially doing the application, or is it better to contact you after you've been denied?
I think that any attorney would answer that question in any field. The earlier, the better. I talk to people who are still working but facing medical issues and want to know what Social Security disability is all about so that they can kind of have a little framework to the next few years of their lives, and they know where to call when, you know, things reach the point where they have to stop work. The earlier, the better, especially because SSD applications can be done online, but they have become so enormously difficult that for the past few years, we've been doing them with the claimant. So one of my staff will be on the computer and on a phone with the claimant, and we'll do the initial application. They've made it very difficult just to get your foot in the door. Now, for SSI, the claimant still has to initiate that either by calling the Social Security hotline or calling their local office to try to get an appointment for an application over the phone. SSI applications are different than SSD applications. Mm-hmm. We'll do the SSD applications. We'll do it from the beginning, or we'll pick it up along the way.
How long does it take for somebody to get a hearing after they've been initially denied? And is it common for people to be initially denied?
Almost always, unless they face something drastic, you know, a liver cancer would be something where they're not going to wind up needing to speak to an attorney because it's a terminal illness. It takes about 3 to 4 months. This is generally from the application to the first form denial letter, which is not to be meant to be taken personally. It's just a form letter that says, we don't think that you meet the standards, and they give a lot of baloney reasons. So I tell people, just ignore that. I need to know the date of the denial. Now we're talking, we're already 3 to 4 months into the claim. All I need is the date on the letter, and we can do the appeal. In the meantime, they've probably had an appointment to see a Social Security doctor. There's probably been some paperwork to fill out. It's all just standard routine nonsense. After that first denial, Dean, there will be very little activity for the next 2 to 3 months. Not much happens. And then the way the process works now, don't ask me to explain it because I don't make the rules. I just deal with them. You get a second denial letter. The first one is you have to file what's known as a notice for reconsideration. Mm. The second one is a request for hearing before an administrative law judge. And that's the key. That's when we'll start getting updates. We'll get forms filled out, again, by physicians as best we can, again, to show how the problems that people are facing are developing and progressing. And from that point, it will take about 5 to 6 months. Generally, there's no set time frames for a hearing to be set, and then off we go to a hearing. And by off we go, I mean getting the hearing set. We don't go anywhere, as I said before.
How long does that hearing take? And before you answer that, we're up against our break. So, right. Folks, we got Todd Burke here. We're talking Social Security disability. We're also answering your questions. We're also on live on YouTube. Todd, see, look at the camera. Say hello.
Hello.
The camera does not lie. He is casually dressed in a pink and I don't know, periwinkle shirt.
Is periwinkle really a color? Periwinkle blue?
I believe so, and I think he's wearing it.
I think I've got it.
Folks, we'll be right back after 2 minutes. We'll see you soon. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Rhythms. Yes. Sorry, I misspoke, and my gentleman friend to my right has corrected me.
Do you keep? Do you watch us on YouTube?
I do.
He is chatting. Yes, yeah. He is chatting, folks.
So anyway, yeah. Just as a reminder to our audience, if you want to see us and hear us, if you go to the My Philly Lawyer website and then click on the link for Court Radio, on the Court Radio page, you'll find another link to go to Court Radio Live during the broadcast. It's pretty simple. And then if you, as Chris, my friend Chris Voodoo, who is a card shark on Thursday nights, if he says you need to like and subscribe, so the logarithms will algorithms will like us. Wow. It's a hard word for me for some reason.
Yeah, you like... Todd is reading a question from the YouTube audience.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was a disability recipient as a child, okay?
Were you?
I was. I was everything, you know. Yeah. I was not always, you know, my Philly lawyer. I was a kid from the Oxford Circle, and as a guy whose parents were disabled, I think they might have gotten a little shtickle for me as well.
Yes.
Why? How?
There's a what's known as a family allowance, and what happens is if the wage earner becomes disabled until age 16, children will share in up to one half of the wage earner's Social Security disability benefit.
Wow, that's not an insignificant sum.
It doesn't always rise to half of that benefit because of various formulas and algorithms to drop a commonly used word. But children will get additional benefits.
So my parents, individually, each of them in their early 50s had a massive blowout heart attack back in the, you know, talking in the 70s. And both of them were hairdressers. Right. They were both on their feet all day. And each of them at their when they had these incidents got on Social Security disability.
Right.
And they went through this process. They were denied. They had a hearing. They got on the benefit, and then because I was still a minor living at home, they got something for me as well.
Yes, that would be accurate.
Okay. Yeah. Having been down this road, I'm sympathetic to folks who are faced with these problems, and that's why I turn them over to Todd, because he, too, is a sympathetic guy, and he just nurtures them along the way. You know, sometimes attorneys can be very cold and very
arrogant.
Yeah, arrogant. And that's, I try not to associate with attorneys like that. You know, I really want the clients to be cared for in a way that I would want to be cared for. How do people get in touch with you if they need to reach you? And they're, you know, maybe they want to put your phone number in their phone for the day when they do need you. What's the number?
215-557-7777.
Boxer Street.
And I should add that despite my age and some orthopedic surgeries that I've suffered through, so I do have some sense of understanding of what a lot of my claimants go through, I love my work, which is why I keep doing it. And what I have found is that even in these times, or maybe especially in these times, I'm as busy as ever because, you know, the claims are still out there. I still love doing them, and I intend to keep doing them as long as possible.
That's awesome. And now I want to know, we have already determined that post-COVID, things in your world have changed because now hearings
Yes.
are telephonic, not in person. Has things subsequently changed since the new administration has come in and axed a large segment of the federal workforce? Have you been impacted by that?
only
about Doge, right?
Not in terms of the time, but it has become where there is totally inadequate staff. Hiring was frozen during COVID. Hiring remains frozen, and there have obviously been employment cuts. What happens is it's just that much more difficult to get in touch with a human being, an employee, a service person, a claims representative along the way for both claimants and attorneys like myself in my office. So the computers still move the claims along relatively at the same speed, but getting in touch with someone, you can't do it anymore. In fact, in December, you were no longer allowed to walk into a Social Security office, your local Social Security office that you paid taxes for, and talk to someone as long as you were willing to wait in line. Now you've got to find the number, call for an appointment, hope that someone answers the phone. There's the problem, and try to get an appointment down the road. No more walk-ins, and that's terrible for individuals.
Wow.
Can't
it
get
really
attention.
Is, Gene. I mean, think about it. You're talking about, and it's not everyone, but the majority of this swath of folks of a particular age, they're used to hearing a live voice.
Yes.
They're used to talking to someone.
Yes.
They're used to social engagement.
Yes.
Now, that's gone.
It is.
And it's for the majority of folks who are used to that. Now you got to type. Eyesight is bad. They've got disabilities.
They might not have a computer.
They might not have a computer.
I was going to say, they're not tech savvy. They want to talk to people, and there aren't people for them to talk to.
The vulnerable, here we go back to the vulnerable people.
The most vulnerable people are the ones who are actually always getting hit the hardest. That's always the case.
And folks, one day it will be you.
Yeah.
It will be you.
That's right.
215-227-2727. Let's see if we got any callers. It's been a while since they called in, so hopefully they stuck around. Line two, Alonzo. Alonzo?
Hello.
Oh, you patient man, you. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Alonzo.
Good morning, and welcome to Court Radio.
So I have a question here. Family and I are living in a house. We have a fire. The insurance company pays us out for the fire. We have to relocate because the house is inhabitable. The sheriff's sale comes up, tax lien sheriff's sale comes up. They sell the property at the tax sale.
The property that you the property you previously lived in that had a fire.
Yes, that I own, but it had a fire. They sell it at the sheriff's sale.
Okay.
For not paying the taxes.
Uh-huh.
However, since my family and I wasn't living at the property, we were never notified of the sheriff's sale.
Okay, well, they posted the property. That's probably a proper legal notice.
Is that normal?
If you move out and you don't give a forwarding address, down at the Recorder of Deeds office, then they don't look for you.
It sounds like on the surface is they had to move because of the fire, and whilst they were out,
you still have to pay the taxes. Even if the property sits there destroyed, it still has a tax bill due.
But he's talking about notifications.
Understood. But if they posted the property, I don't know if they did, but I'm saying it could be proper legal notice if they simply tack up a notice onto the door of the property.
If there's still a door.
If there's still, okay. Or the wall. So let's assume for a moment, Alonzo, that there was proper notice. What's your question?
No, I'm assuming that there was no proper notice because I never received no type of notice, no type of posting on a property that I know of or anything. But now, some years later, someone purchased the property, renovate the property, and this person comes to me and tries to get me to sign a quick claim deed, and I learned that I still may have an interest in the property because I was never notified.
You may. And in fact, the fact that he or she has asked you to sign a quitclaim deed indicates to me that they are not the legal owner of the property. And the question, you know, another question floating around is whether you had title insurance, whether they have title insurance, and whether there's a deep pocket here. So the answer to your question is that a lot of research has to go into uncovering what the transfer of that property was, or whether there was a transfer of that property. And what you need to do is retain an attorney who can do a proper analysis of the title of that property to see who is currently the owner of that property. And for that, I invite... Go ahead.
The deed is in their name. They acquired the property from a gentleman who purchased the property from the sheriff's sale after I so-called lost the property.
Right, but they're asking you to sign a quitclaim.
Yeah. Why then would they be asking you to sign a quitclaim deed if they are the legal entity who owns the property today? That's the question.
Because they're trying to get title insurance.
And the title is clouded right now because somebody didn't do something correctly.
That's right.
And so you may be in a position to negotiate something out of that property, or you may be able to get the property back. I really can't tell you that in this conversation, but I can tell you to give the office a call during the week and ask for Saul, who does all of the property claims in our office. I will say this. Even if we think there is a way to get this property back for you, this is a very cumbersome and expensive process. Yeah. And so be prepared to be able to have to spend money on the attorneys to file necessary petitions, to have hearings before judges, to bring witnesses in, et cetera, et cetera. It gets to be very expensive. But if the property has significant value and you have the means to fund that litigation, then perhaps that's something you're interested in. But that's something that will have to be determined once you give the office a call next week. The same number, 215-227-2727, and ask for Saul.
Better call Saul.
Thank you.
All right, Alonzo, have a great Saturday, and thanks for calling us. Beep. We're back with Todd M. Burke, the one, the only, dapper in a pink shirt with periwinkle stripes. Todd specializes and focuses his practice on Social Security disability, and we've been talking about that. So what are some of the disabilities that are, oh, you got this, you're disabled?
Those wind up ALS diagnoses, metastasized cancer diagnoses. In the mental health field, very tough, but there can be for depression and anxiety, so long as we're talking about medically documented severity of the issues. It really amounts to not just diagnoses, but severity is really the key. Mild or moderate findings make for very difficult, if not impossible, claims. We're always looking for problems that are deemed medically to be severe. And that will come up during the hearing in front of judges, which is something we may want to talk about also.
Yeah, how long does that hearing take, and what is that process all about?
That's where I like to say it's where the magic happens, because we have to go through a year or so of rigmarole to get me in front of a judge. I'm not speaking about personally, but figuratively, to get me with the judge for about an hour. And these hearings are non-adversarial. There is not an opposing counsel who's going to produce so-called evidence or to cross-examine the claimant. Instead, they are administrative processes where the idea is for the judge and I to elicit from the claimant the issues that they're facing and, number one, the particular medical issues, and, number two, especially the effects on the individual basically on a daily basis.
So
one second, young man. What's like the percentage like of your constellation of cases that you go before a judge? How many of them result in a disability finding in favor of your client?
I'm talking right now in the range of 75 to 80%. Right. Nobody wins 100%. It's just impossible. Some judges, and I should say that most of the judges are enormously fair and qualified. Some judges are just very, very difficult to work with. And when I say work with, it's because, again, it's the judge and I who are trying to find out why the claimant may or may not deserve a finding of total disability.
Now, in the hearing, what's the role of a vocational expert?
There always is a vocational expert listening in on the hearing. They don't make decisions. They have nothing to do. They never even know what the final decision is. Their role is to define past work and given certain hypotheticals from the judge and myself to try to figure out if there's any work that can be done. So past work definition and hypothetical any other work. And that falls into a lot of different scenarios.
Let's talk to Chanel on line 5. Chanel, welcome to Court Radio.
Hello.
Hi, how are you, dear? What's your question for Todd?
My question is, I hear a lot of the questions being asked for someone that's 50 years old, but I'm 45 years old, and I've been disabled for the last 4 years. But, you know, everyone is telling me that it's so hard to do it for someone that's 45.
I'm assuming from your question that you're not currently on disability.
No.
Okay. So what are her chances, just based on age? She became disabled at 41. She's now 45.
It's going to depend on the nature of the medical issues. It depends on what any past work has been. And more importantly, it depends on the definition and the proof of the medical issues. I've won claims for people that are children or they're 21 or they're 45 or they're 65. It depends on everything that goes into the claim. In this young lady's case, I would say I would need to know what are the medical issues that prevent you from doing any kind of work. That would be my next question if she was on the phone with me next week.
All right, Chanel, give Todd a call. I hope you've taken his number down. Give him a call on Monday, and he's going to dig into what your medical conditions are which are preventing you from working. And then with that information, he'll be able to give you a more realistic expectation on whether you will qualify for disability.
Yeah, give it that number again.
215-557-7777.
Okay, thank you.
Folks, we are up against our last break. I know you got questions. Keep them coming. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when
and winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, my Philly lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Baby, we're back. I'm Dean Weitzman, the host of Court Radio every Saturday morning, right here on 100.3 WRNB
and Classics 107.9,
and live on YouTube. Folks, if you're listening, watching live on YouTube, like and subscribe so that we get our algorithms.
Yeah. I'm not even going to
come on.
Correct you
give
again.
Me come on one more time.
It's algorithms.
Oh, okay. Our algorithms. We'll get the algorithm set up in such a way that we will become the most famous show on all of YouTube.
We got to give Dean Weitzman some rhythm.
They've been trying to do that for decades.
Can't buy it either. No.
That's the one thing.
That's
you
the
can't,
one thing
no.
you can't buy.
No. Rhythm. Can't buy rhythm. All right, let's talk to Latasha on line one. Tactics, Latasha.
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning. Welcome to Core Radio. What's your question for Todd M. Burke?
Yes, my question is for Todd. Is that in 2018? I have been receiving Social Security since 2006. In 2018, you know, I was young, and something had happened as far as a third party. And I did give up the court Social Security, all the bank stubs to the third party on what had happened with Lyft, and it was going into my checking account. And now I'm 63 years old, and I was living in Duncannon for 3 years, and I was time for me to move. But I was working part-time on a van-driving job, and I had to collect my retirement money, but I didn't want to, but I had to order for me to move. Okay, and now I'm back in Philadelphia, and I have went to my doctors, and I have osteoarthritis, which is a bone disease now. I had one surgery done in my left knee in 2018. Now I need another one, and now I find out that I got a bone disease. I had problems with my liver, and I had second stage diabetes. I take medication. I have Graves' disease. I done been tested at the government for what type of jobs
all
that
right.
I can get.
Latasha, take a breath, because we're running out of time with a list of your diseases.
Yes.
Go ahead, Todd. Does she qualify for disability now?
I would have to go through with her a lot of questions about the amount of her past work beginning from 2018 to the present, whether she was on SSI or SSD before, what kind of retirement. Well, she's getting early retirement benefits now. There's a whole lot more questions that I would need to ask Latasha when she calls next week before I would be able to advise her. And by the way, I give out free time and advice generously and as often as I can, because I know that's what people are looking for, is communication and advice. Even if there isn't a case, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I would be happy to talk to Latasha, but I need to spend a lot of time with her asking a lot more questions.
Latasha, you heard it. You got to give Todd a call Monday next week, and he's going to spend some time going over your individual claim.
You got the number, Latasha? Okay. You got the number?
I believe the number is 215-557-7777.
You got it.
See what happens? All right.
Love it.
When does disability end from an age perspective?
Well, SSD will end when you hit your full retirement age, whatever that happens to be. The month afterwards, you'll get basically roughly almost the same amount of monthly benefit, but it's called for retirement instead of for disability insurance. It'll end at full retirement. SSI will always end at early retirement, age 62, if you have enough paid in that they'll pay any kind of retirement. Let's say someone has worked from ages 20 to 40, but not after that. So they've paid something into the system. Now they're on SSI. They hit 62. It will automatically be shoveled into early retirement benefits. No choice on the matter. That's just the way it works.
How long do you have to be disabled before you're entitled to Medicare?
29 months from the day that you're found disabled, which is not the same date that you're paid, but it is 29 months from the day you're found disabled, the wait until you will be eligible for Medicare, unless you turn 65 in the meantime, which is automatic.
2 years and 5 months.
That's right.
Yeah. And then you get all of the health benefits from a full insurance policy under Medicare.
That's right. And if I have someone whose claim originated 3 or 4 years ago and I win the claim, they may be eligible for Medicare right off the bat because I won their claim more than and proved them disabled more than 29 months ago.
So it goes back to the beginning of your disability.
Yes.
Not the day that it's recognized by the court system.
Correct. That's
all right. All right. I think we're just up against the hour, aren't we?
Good show. A lot of information.
Folks, we try to dish out some nuggets of gold every...
Speaking of which, Princess likes your shirt.
Thank you, Princess. Well, if you'd like a shirt, Princess...
Oh, there it is.
you just have to get 50 friends to follow us on YouTube Live.
Oh, boy. Good one. All right.
Hey, 50 friends.
50 friends.
No, that's too much. I would say 25.
Okay.
Yeah, you get
10.
All right, 10. That's it. I'm not going lower than 10.
Come on, tactic. 10.
That's all right.
That's
10.
Doable. 15. 10's doable.
For this week, that's 15. That's no, we're going to go with going with the old man.
You know what?
All right, folks, we're out of time. We'll see you next Saturday, same time, same place.
The preceding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.